Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Entrepreneurship Through Acquisition podcast, sponsored by the Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. I'm Brian O'Connor, adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at Chicago Booth, and joining me today, I have the pleasure of speaking with two very interesting and accomplished individuals that were instrumental in the management buyout of Kellermeyer Building Services, also known as KBS, the largest self-performed cleaning company in North America, focused on the retail market. First, we have here Ken Sander, former chairman and CEO of KBS, and Dan Kessler, partner at Cyprium Partners, which is the firm that decided to join forces with Ken and his team at KBS to effectuate the ultimate management buyout. Gentlemen, thanks for joining today.
Thank you, Brian.
Great. Ken, why don't we start with a little bit of background? If you might share with us your story, how you came to get involved with KBS, and maybe a little bit about sort of your bio, and then we can transition a little bit into the KBS business model and what it's all about.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Northwest Ohio. After high school, I went to Bowling Green State University and graduated from there. After that, I received my CPA and went to work for a local CPA firm in the Toledo area. One of my customers was Kellermeyer Company, and I did their year-end closing for 4 years, and they had a division that was Kellermeyer Building Services, and it was a very small division at that particular time. But in 1978, they came to me and asked me if I'd be interested in taking their accounting job. After talking to the president, Clark Lockhart, who was a very interesting guy, very energetic, he had this vision of being a nationwide company with sales of $100 million. And it sounded all good and great, and I sat there and listened to him. I said, well, if you put this all in writing, I would be interested in maybe talking to you more. Well, he put it in writing, and that was the first employment contract from Kellermeyer Building Service. And at that time, Kellermeyer Building Service was less than $3 million in sales, and they were in three states. And so he had this great vision. So in 1978, I started as their accountant. During the years, I got promoted to controller and then into CFO.
If you would, maybe take a minute or two for context, sharing a little bit about KBS as a business and sort of the evolution of the company. Obviously, back when you got involved in the business in the late 70s, there's been some tremendous growth in the company. Maybe talk a little bit about the evolution of KBS as a company.
Well, KBS, what we were a commercial cleaning company, and we specialized in retail cleaning. At that time, a lot of the retailers were going from in-house cleaning to contract cleaning. And they did that for a couple of reasons. One, they could save money. Two, it was actually they got a better product than them doing it themselves. So what was unique about Kellermeyer was we hired all our employees. So we hired the people, we trained them, and we developed them. And as we grew, we promoted from within because of the people were trained in our cleaning technique. So even though we were located in 42 states, we only had one corporate office. We wanted to put all our dollars into the stores, into the field. Our field management, we were very fortunate, was very smart, very hardworking, but they spent their time in the stores, and that kind of led them to keeping us on the leading edge of what our employees were looking for and what our customers were looking for. So some of the first for us was we implemented E-Verify long before our customers required it. We were the first one of the contractors of our customers that did the electronic inspections. First, we had them on the Palm Pilot, and then we went to the iPads. The other thing that was a major breakthrough for us is that we did a payroll system through the thumb readers in the stores. What that did was allow us to keep track of the labor on a daily basis, and that led to us eventually being able to do daily P&L. So anytime that our management team wanted to look at where they were on the profit, they could go to their dashboard and bring it up.
Great. And while they had a very decentralized structure, they had a very definite corporate culture that was cohesive across the company, from the top down, from Ken, from the cleaning crews up to Ken. It was one Keller Meyer across the whole country. And that was, we felt as investors coming in that that was very unique. And the ability, as Ken said, to do things like immigration compliance, ensuring the quality of the cleaning just across the full geographic footprint was unique and very appealing.
Sure. And Ken, specifically on that culture, how much of that existed in the late 70s when you got involved in the company versus, you know, the evolution that you saw throughout the 80s? Was that incumbent in the organization, or was that something that you sort of brought and fostered as the company grew?
Well, Clark Larkart, who was the president, was the one that really initiated that, putting the employees first. But then the task force carried it through the whole company. So it was something that developed over a long period of time. And by the time 1992, it was well established. I mean, we had our priorities. We shared it with our customers. Our customers liked the fact that we made our employees number one. And in the long term, it paid off.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, it certainly did. So Dan, if we can shift gears a little bit, maybe a little bit on your background. Tell us a little bit more about Cyprium and your business model, and maybe what drew you to some of the stuff that Ken just walked us through as it relates to KBS.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'm a proud Chicago Booth XP75 graduate. And so I've been with our firm, Cyprium, for 17 years. I'm a partner, as you said, in the Cleveland office. And what we do is a bit unique in the private equity space in that we are focused almost entirely on making non-control investments in privately held businesses. Those businesses are owned by families, entrepreneurs, management teams, or employee groups. And so we're not going into larger transactions where there's a private equity sponsor. Instead, we're working directly with the business owners and management teams. Typically, we're the sole institutional investor in the business. And so one of the things that really drew us to Keller Meyer was the quality and strength of that management team. As a minority investor, we don't have some of we don't have hardly any of the controls that a control buyout group would have in terms of setting the strategy, changing out executives. Instead, we're buying into the strategy and the executive team that's already in place. And so when we met Ken and his team, we were immediately sold on all of the things that Ken spoke about earlier, that they put the employees first, that quality and compliance was key. And so as we dug in and did our due diligence, all of those things were confirmed. We went around the country and met with some of the key managers throughout the entire organization. And to a person, they all said the same things. They all had the same priorities. They all had the same operating strategy. And when we can see, particularly in a service business, when we can see that cohesiveness throughout the organization, that's very attractive to us.
Yeah, and Dan, throughout the courtship with KBS and getting to know the business and the field employees and the customers, what, if anything, did you identify about the company or the management team or maybe the broader industry that you said, wow, this is a really exciting opportunity, but we can maybe add a little value here by rolling up our sleeves and getting involved? Maybe a few ideas, if you can recall back to the days of diligence and the courtship phase with KBS.
Clearly. So an element of their strategy that we really bought into was acquisitions. They had identified a number of other companies in the industry that they wanted to look at potentially acquiring. Ultimately, we were able to execute one acquisition during our hold period, but we pursued quite a few others that for various reasons, primarily not fitting into the culture of KBS, which we all fully bought into and didn't want to upset. We passed on a lot more than we closed, which turned out to be the right decision, we believe. So that was one area. Another area that we spent a lot of time on during diligence was analyzing the analyzing at a very discrete level the profitability by customer, by region, and working with management to look at their customer base and consider firing some of our customers or certain regions of some of our customers. And that's a very difficult thing for a management team in a growing business to consider, is saying, let's take a step back and perhaps not grow the top line as much next year and focus more on the bottom line. And Ken and his team were always focused on the bottom line, but having that outside investor, particularly in this case at the board level, talking about strategy and what do we want to be, what do we value as an organization, taking that step back and having an open discussion about it, I think was very healthy.
Yeah, and Ken, did the notion of firing a customer that was willing to, you know, write you a check every month for your services, did that strike you as being a little bit crazy when it was first socialized?
Well, it was. But, you know, one of the things that when we looked at our customer concentration and the profitability of some, it was necessary to cut back in some areas. But what we liked about Cyprium was the fact that they looked at the long term. They weren't looking to maximize the dollars for the next month or two, but really what the future of the company was going to be. And that's why we had such a good partnership.
Yeah. Ken, not to take too much of a step back here, but, you know, I think it might be helpful for the listeners to get a little sense for the evolution in the capital structure and the ownership. Maybe walk us through the timeline. I mean, I know you started with in 78, your involvement with the company. Maybe help us understand, you know, I understand there was a capital event in 2001. Maybe walk us through the timeline and the evolution of KBS that ultimately led to the partnership with Cyprium.
Okay. Well, in 1992, we bought the company from the original owners. So we had approximately 12 to 15 shareholders at that particular time. When it got to be 2001, some of the shareholders wanted to start looking at maybe retiring or doing other things in their life. And one of the covenants that we had in our business was to be a shareholder, you had to be an active working employee. So we had like three or four people that were looking to maybe retire. So we wanted to make sure we got full value. So we hired an investment banker, went through the sales process, and in 2001, we sold 80% of the company to a private equity group called Civic right here in Chicago. What was unique about that was Civic did not have the highest price that they offered us, but we liked the people. We liked the vision. They liked our management team. They loved our culture. And so it seemed to be a really, really good partnership. And that proved to be true. Even though they were the owners, they treated us more like partners than the did employees. And so we had a great relationship with them. After they held us for 6 years, as a lot of private equity groups, they wanted to move on. And they went through the sales process, hired an investment banker, happened to be Piper Jaffray. They went through the process, got some quotes, and pretty much had a range where the price was going to be. And at that time, I went to Civic and said, hey, if you're going to sell at that price, maybe we could do something with our management team.
And Ken, this sounds like a recurring theme for you. Back in 92, again in 2007, you clearly, you and the employees, the key employees of this organization, really believed in the business, in the industry, and the mission.
We did. Initially, you know, in cleaning business, you're only good as your last day of cleaning. And so there was always the fear that somebody making a decision at one of our major customers is going to cut us out. But after we developed a relationship with our management team, and a lot of our managers have been with us 20 or 30 years, there was a much more comfort level, and we had more confidence in what we could do. And so after we talked to Civic, they were receptive to it. I've talked to our management team. And once we reached the price with Civic, then it was a matter of how are we going to do this capital structure. Because even though our management team, some of them have been involved in selling the company and buying the company before, they didn't want to put all their money into a new deal.
Sure.
And so that's why we teamed up with Piper. They introduced us to Cyprium. The good thing was Civic had a relationship with Cyprium. They had done a deal with them before. And so in putting it together, we were able to structure a deal that the employees could live with, because the requirement for the employees was basically to roll 50% of what the money they received from Civic over to the new deal. Some of the people elected to put 100% in. So we were able to raise basically 8% of the total purchase price.
And as the outside capital coming into that transaction, when you see management commit a substantial portion of their net worth, and as Ken said, the requirement was 50%, there were some who put in much more than that. That's a fantastic signal for us as the outside capital,
of course,
that this management team truly believes in the business.
And Dan, that's a great point. Is that a fairly customary level of role in the partnerships that you're forming?
Yeah, it really varies pretty dramatically in terms of the amount of equity capital that's being contributed by management. In this case, management's rollover represented about 8% of the total capital structure. We were able to finance the transaction with 50% senior debt. Cyprium came in for the other 42% of the capital and is split between subordinated debt and preferred equity. And so in this case, that was sufficient risk capital from the management team that we were able to get comfortable that they were, to use an overused cliche, that they were all in and that they truly believed in their story.
If you could share with us a little bit more about the capital structure and the way that it worked. There are probably a lot of management teams out there that are listening, and I think they'd be very curious to understand a little bit more of the detail around that equity rollover and how it sits in the capital structure with their new partners.
Of course. So as I said, a portion of our investment was in subordinated debt. The rest was in preferred equity. And Ken and his team, their equity was common below the principal balance of our preferred. But the return on our preferred equity was really generated by the common equity warrants that came along with that preferred investment. And so by having the preference in the capital structure, it allows us to create a less dilutive security for the management team. So walking into the transaction, as Ken alluded to, they own 20% of the common equity of the business coming in. They took 50% of their proceeds off the table, rolled the other 50%, and upon close of the management buyout transaction with Cyprium, management owned two-thirds of the common equity and Cyprium owned the remainder.
Understood. And how much of the investment from Cyprium, you mentioned that there was an add-on acquisition that was consummated after the partnership. How much of that capital that you put into the business was used as growth capital?
It's a difficult question to answer. It was a period of great growth. But as a service-oriented company, rather than a manufacturer, that growth is largely funded by your own operations.
Sure.
The acquisition that we were able to complete, we financed entirely with senior debt. The company had been successful, had begun to delever, and we relevered up again with senior debt to execute that acquisition.
Great. So there was additional debt capacity at the business to finance that acquisition. Great.
Yeah, Brian, we never had... the covenants were never so restrictive that we couldn't grow.
Sure.
And so in our business, it wasn't unusual that we may pick up 200 stores in one day, which would maybe require $1.5 million to $2 million of capital.
Sure.
And so we were able to do that. And that's what was one of the great things with Cyprium, that they would work with us on that.
Sure, sure. For a minute, if we could go back to the relationship between Piper representing you in the transaction, your partner in Civic. What concerns, if any, did Piper as the representative, or maybe more importantly, Civic as principal shareholder, have about potential conflicts of interest, maybe concerns around value maximization through a MBO structure like this? Talk us maybe through, Ken, if you would, that dynamic between the principal shareholder group, the management team, and your investment banker.
Well, Civic basically took the company to market and got a fair valuation of what the company was worth. And once we made it known that we were interested in buying it back, Piper went to work, and that's when they brought Cyprium in. And once we had the purchase price, Piper worked with Cyprium and with Civic to how can we structure the deal. You know, the dollar amount of 50% that we had to put in was basically what we needed to do to make the deal work. So they all worked together. Civic was great to work with as far as once they got the price. And then when we looked at our new partners, they had the same values as we did. They came out into the stores. They spent time with them. Dan still knows some of our management team down to our branch manager, which is incredible. And so they attended all our annual meetings. We had a monthly task force call where we reviewed our customers, what was going on, and they participated on every one. So they adapted to our business instead of us having to adapt how they wanted us to do business.
Sounds like the makings of a great partnership, yeah.
Yeah, I think it really was. One of the benefits that we often see in management buyout transactions is that certainty of close that the seller is looking for. Selling to the management team can often be a much easier transaction than selling to an outside third party that still needs to learn all about the nuts and bolts of the business. In this case, Ken and his team were running the business, so they can say with a very high degree of certainty that they can close this management buyout transaction. I think that oftentimes provides the seller with an extra bit of motivation to consider an MBO.
Yep. Tell us, Ken, a little bit about, obviously this would have been a little bit of a different transaction than had Civic pursued the path of selling to a strategic buyer or a financial buyer that was not interested in partnering with existing management in the way that it came together with Cyprium. Tell us a little bit about that transaction process, maybe the types of advisors that you used. If that deal was different in any way than, a more sort of traditional private equity transaction or certainly different than a sale to a strategic buyer, maybe walk us through some of the nuances associated with that transaction in this structure.
Okay. Well, Piper Jaffray, led the charge on this as far as introducing us to Cyprium. And, once we started putting this deal structure together, Civic was on board. And what was really attractive to us was the fact that we were putting up 8% of the money and going from 20% to 65.5%. So our management team was all on board. They thought there was enough upside potential with our customers and our business that we could make this thing work. And in the long term, it did. So the people that we relied on was Piper Jaffray, Civic, and once we met Cyprium, we were aboard with them and our legal team.
Sure, sure. Shifting gears a little bit, I'd love to hear, Ken, you've talked a little bit about the dynamic between you, your team at KBS, and the folks, Dan and others, I'm assuming, at Cyprium. Let's talk a little bit about maybe the difference in your viewpoint in running the company as an employee. Now, I'm assuming you had some ownership under, well, you did have some ownership under the Civic construct. But going from sort of this notion of being an employee, and even early on in your days back in the late 70s, early 80s with KBS, and into sort of running the company as an owner. Maybe talk us through sort of that dynamic.
Well, as I said, Civic was a great partner. But the difference between being an employee and an owner, you obviously have a vested interest. So your decisions that you're making a day-to-day basis with your customer, you can see how it impacts you. And one of the things that we did as a company, we always had an annual shareholder meeting where we call people in and basically show how much value we created during the course of the year using just kind of a standard multiple. So that was key there. And when you're running the business, you're setting policy. You're determining what direction you're going to go. Hey, are we going to roll out this new payroll system? We didn't have to check with anybody when you're doing things like that. I mean, we were very big on innovation, and the people that we teamed up with supported us in that. But once you own the company, once you become majority, we informed Dan and his team instead of getting permission to do it. So.
Sure. Well, I would imagine, too, that at least from my own experience, it becomes a little bit of a different dynamic in that it's increasingly difficult to, quote unquote, turn it off. I've found that, I'm ever thinking about my business, ever engaged in my business. And that honestly has that's been consistent in proportion to the level of sort of ownership and involvement that I have with the company. I mean, would you share that same opinion?
Without question. We were in retail cleaning. There was one day a year that the stores were closed, and so we never were able to turn it off. And that is when Civic would own us, but even when we're owning ourselves, you're right, there's that much more incentive. You just hated to fail. And so it's definitely a driving force.
Sure. How about any advice that you might have, having gone through this in the way that you have, Ken, you know, maybe for owners, existing owners, management teams that might be looking to follow a similar path in an MBO, maybe as they think about their capital alternatives. And then specifically, maybe start there, but then specifically as they're thinking about partners in effectuating an MBO transaction, what was important to you and what might you encourage them to think about? Maybe the questions that you'd think would be important to keep top of mind.
My recommendation would do the same thing that the private equity groups and Cyprium does to a potential investor. They go through, they get to know the team, and really want to know the culture, what they see as the future. So one of the things that we did, we wanted to know who we were going to be dealing with in the future. And so we wanted to meet the people. We wanted to know how they expected us to perform, how we were going to report to them. Was it going to be a daily basis? How they wanted the information to flow? And if they were going to allow us to run the business as we've run in the past and not change our culture. So if I could give any recommendation to any management group, interview the people that are going to invest with you just as hard as they interview you. And if you don't like it, back away from it there. You just want to eliminate all the surprises going down the road. And going through the capital structure, that's where you need professionals to help you. I mean, we are not tied into the capital markets nearly as much as Piper Jaffray or Cyprium or Civic. And you build a trust and relationship with the people, and they're usually looking out for your best interest.
Sure, sure. And Dan, how about from your perspective, you know, as you evaluate management teams that might be inclined to pursue this path, what advice might you have for them when positioning themselves as a Cyprium backing worthy group of executives?
Yeah, I guess my piece of advice would be to be open with your potential capital partner. Tell them all the good, explain to them all the bad. You would rather have, we speak in our shop about, I would rather have a no for the right reason than a yes for the wrong reason. And so, as Ken's saying, make sure that partnership starts off on the right foot. Make sure that your capital partner understands your business. You're going to have challenges. You're going to have opportunities. You want them to be able to intelligently respond to both. So make sure that they're taking the time to do their due diligence. And somewhat self-serving for me to say, of course, but make sure that you're open with them.
Sure, sure. No, I think that's great advice, particularly around the candor associated with the challenges that might exist in a business. I think it's so important that in evaluating a potential partnership in a management team, how honest and self-aware are they about the challenges that are inherent in their business, because all businesses have them.
Yes, absolutely.
So, a nice place to kind of wrap up the conversation might be around the exit. Ken and Dan, maybe you can both take this one. But, you know, when did you sort of know it was time to kind of move on? Tell us a little bit about the process and what role can you and your team played in that process versus where and if Cyprium might have gotten involved in that ultimate exit?
Well, this was one of the values that Cyprium brought to us. They actually came to us and said that the marketplace for our company at this time was higher than it normally was. They were selling at a higher multiple. We sat down with John and Dan, and they laid this out to us, and we took it back to the management team, kind of determined that we were going to have to grow our business or EBITDA by 20 or 25% to get at the same value that the multiples currently we could get. So with that, we decided, hey, let's take a look and see if we can get this. And so we went through the process.
And for the listener's benefit, when were these conversations transpiring, Ken?
2010, early part of 2010.
Okay. Yep.
So with that, we went out and hired an investment banker, Baird & Associates, and went through the marketing process, and we had a successful exit. From the employee standpoint, it was successful because we got 7 times what we invested. Obviously, everybody was happy about that on the upside. It's a life-changing event for people, and so it worked out very well.
Yeah, and Dan, maybe Cipriam's thought process on the investment, the time horizon, the evolution of the company during your partnership mm-hmm. with KBS, maybe some comments on that.
Yeah, it goes without saying it was a wonderful experience partnering with Ken and his management team. The experience was exactly what we hoped it would be, both from a personally rewarding standpoint as well as financially rewarding. With regard to the exit, our job is really to help educate the management team. We're non-control investors. We don't control whether the company is sold or not sold at any particular point in time. That's really the decision of the majority owner. And so our goal is to keep them educated and abreast of what's going on in the markets so when the timing is right, if they do decide to sell, they can execute at that point. Many, perhaps most of our companies, we exit without there being a sale, whether it's a debt investment that simply gets refinanced out or an equity investment that over some period of time they recapitalize us out using a less costly form of capital. So that's really up to the management team in a non-control transaction, up to the ownership group in a non-control transaction.
And that flexibility in those alternatives for you to receive liquidity on your investment, I'm assuming is how you get around potential issues associated with the period in time in which you have capital locked up in any given investment.
Exactly. We're structured as a private equity fund. Like all the other private equity funds, we like being illiquid investors for some period of time, but it can't go on indefinitely. And so as the case was with Kellermeyer, the maturity of our investments was structured to be much longer than the actual holding period turned out to be. But there came a point in time where Ken and his team said, now is the right time to exit. And so we exit along with them.
Yep.
Cipriam made it very clear to us it was our decision. They said they were happy to continue to let us run the business, but if we decided to sell, they would agree with that. So it was our decision. They just let us know what was happening in the capital market.
Fantastic. Ken, you go through the transaction. You obviously have a very successful outcome for you and Cipriam and all your partners in the business. What did life look like on the day after that transaction?
Well, we sold to another private equity group. Obviously, personally, we're financially a lot better off, but we continued on running the business, and it really didn't change that much, Brian, as far as the people that was still working in it. Because the one thing about our management team, they didn't want to fail. And so whether we were working for ourselves or whoever we were working for, we wanted to be successful. So,
yeah. Well, the story of KBS and Cipriam and the evolution of the ownership and capital structure and employee involvement is a fascinating story. So Ken and Dan, very appreciative of your time and for coming in and sharing your candid thoughts with us. So with that, on behalf of the Polsky Center at University of Chicago Booth School of Business, thank you very much for your time. And it's been a pleasure chatting with you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.